Moncrief on News Talk.
A new book explores the intersection between Irish republicanism and music, a very timely publication in the context of the rise of NECAP and others. Joining me is Stan Erics, a music lecturer in the University of Leeds and the author of Rebel Notes, Popular Music and Conflict in Ireland. Stan, how are you today?
Good, Tom. How are you?
I'm very good. Good to talk to you, Stan. I think we should point out to people that you are formerly of an existence in a band with the Stars of Heaven.
I was indeed. I think, Tom, we probably know each other now, getting on for 45 years.
That's kind of a statistic I don't like to dwell upon, Stan.
And,
yeah, and if I wasn't meeting you on a stage, I was playing five-a-side football against you as well. So, and here we are, this radio show and your book. What kind of got it into your head to want to do this?
Okay, it sort of goes back pretty much as the book narrates chronologically back to the Alan Partridge sketch, or the sketch on the Alan Partridge show in St. Patrick's Day 2019, where he impersonated himself effectively as Sligo farmer Martin Brennan. And then, much to the horror of Alan Partridge, brought on a couple of accompanists and sang a chorus of Come Out You Black and Tans and The Men Behind the Wire. And I'm sure most people remember that.
It was a sublime moment in comedy. I think
we couldn't believe
what we were seeing on the BBC.
Yeah, and I think there was an edge to it, but it was just the right side of acceptable. And I think Coogan probably knew he was taking a chance, but he also probably knew he was taking a chance he couldn't have taken certainly not 5 years before, probably not 10 years before. And that sort of got me interested, and the reaction to it got me interested. But what really got me interested then was the election afterwards in early 2020, and in the lead up to that, when Charlie Flanagan suggested that there should be a commemoration for RIC, men who died in the course of the War of Independence. And there was a bit of an outcry about that, because that was taken to include the Black and Tans. And during that particular controversy, the song, the Wolftones publicised the fact that it had risen to the top of the YouTube, of the iTunes chart. Now, I'm not sure how relevant the iTunes chart was even 5 years ago, but anyway. And the song itself was heard quite a few. It was used, about 4 seconds of it were used in a Sinn Féin election broadcast. And when David Cullinan was elected MP, RTD, I'm sorry, this country for too long, was elected TD in Waterford, there was footage of his supporters singing the song. And so I started thinking, okay, a lot of what I do in terms of teaching and in terms of my writing is about the intersection between music and politics. So here was a situation where a particular song was seeming to have a small but possibly measurable political effect. And most of the academic analysis of that election does mention it, which again is interesting. So this started me thinking. I wrote a short paper about this, which I presented at a conference. People liked it. And in the meantime, the Wolftones career was sort of picking up in an odd kind of way. They were a band that, I mean, they weren't in retirement or anything. They were still active, but they'd certainly been eclipsed, I think, over the previous 20 or 30 years. Then about a year or two later, the controversy over the Irish women's football team been caught singing a chorus of Celtic Symphony in their dressing room after a qualified cup. Now, the lesson from that is, of course, don't let cameras into your dressing room.
Under no circumstances.
Any circumstances, they really should have known that. But I also thought the furore about it was interesting. And I thought also the ways, of course, which it had intersected with what the women's football team had to put up with from the FAI over previous years in terms of not being treated properly.
Changing in Dublin Airport, those stories, honest to God.
Exactly. And I've been following that story for a long time. And I mean, you and I have long experience of the FAI and of Irish football more generally. And I think, you know, so this was a story that caught my attention. But what also caught my attention, of course, was the Wolftones were involved here. So at this point, I decided, okay, there's either a long research paper here or a short book. So I put together a proposal for a short book, sent it off to somebody. They liked it. When I submitted the book, they sort of liked it, but also wanted a lot of changes, which I didn't really want to make because I was kind of quite pleased with what I did.
You're an artist, Stan. I don't think you should be asked to make chart changes.
Remember how difficult I used to be.
Yes.
So at this point, I submitted it to the current publisher, Beyond the Pale in Belfast. Right. They liked it, but they thought it was too short. So they wanted me to look to extend the range of it a little bit, which I did. So I looked at punk in both in the Republic and in Northern Ireland, looked at the ways in which punk rock in Northern Ireland was presented as a sort of hands across the barricades.
Stiff Little Fingers and, you know, I thought great songs, but again, songs written by an English journalist, which was kind of an odd twist in all of that. You know, some of us knew that, many people didn't.
Exactly. I mean, again, as I say in the books, I saw Stiff Little Fingers at the time before the first album, and they were one of the best live bands I've ever seen. So whatever qualms I have about the material and about the origins of the material, that can't be denied that they did it well. So I was interested in that. And then, of course, Kneecap. And, of course, when I started writing about Kneecap, which was about a year and a half ago, I had to explain who they were to a lot of people. I don't think I have to do that now.
I don't think you do. And you know what just flashed up in the studio on the TV news headlines just as you were talking? Kneecap to play Wembley Stadium.
Good Lord.
Right. So we've moved on a long way from trying to explain. But you've seen Kneecap in Leeds, haven't you?
I have, yeah.
And what did you make of it?
So the first time I saw them was in 2022 at the Rydenell Social Club, which is a venue, it's about the size of Whelan's, maybe 400 capacity tops. It was about half full, I reckon. Now, I've often gone to see Irish bands here in Leeds. And usually the audience, you hear Irish accents, is identifiably, there isn't a huge identifiable Irish community here, but there is one. So for example, when I see Lancome in the same venue, I would say 80% of the audience were Irish.
Okay.
When I went to see Kneecap, I would say not more than 10, maybe tops 20% of the audience there were Irish. The rest, going by accents, going by conversations I was overhearing, was fueled by curiosity. And they were hip-hop fans. There were people who were into them because they liked what they did. The fact that they were doing it in Irish, I still find that, like, I've seen them more recently. Yeah. And, you know, obviously I'm used to it. But it's still, I still step back and I'm watching people sing along C-E-A-R-T, in English accents.
Yeah.
And I am a little, more than a little flabbergasted by this. The last time I saw them, which was the end of last year, I think October last year, in the Irish Centre in Leeds, which one of them, I can't remember which one, said looked like an Irish hotel in or an Irish hotel lounge in the 1970s, to which the other person replied, and you were alive at that point. But for those of us who were alive at that point, that's what the Irish Centre in Leeds looks like.
All right. But you're in Leeds, 75% of the thing is in Irish and they're singing along with it. I believe there's 30 Gaelscoids in Belfast. And it's a UK audience going, I mean, it really, you have to wonder the lyrics. And I know you're talking about rebel songs, but you start to come away and think maybe most people aren't really listening to the lyrics.
Well, again, watching a mostly British crowd singing Get Your Brits Out.
Yes.
Again, the surrealism gets a little bit overwhelming at times.
It's amazing.
No, they understand the politics. But what's interesting is that, of course, with Kneecap, a lot of the politics that translates is to do with Palestine, is to do with Israel-Palestine, and to do with the current conflict. And even before that, because actually the first time I saw them was before October the 7th. And there was a lot of buy-in for when Palestinian flags were presented.
Yeah.
I think for a lot of people, there is, as it were, a continuum that runs from anti-colonialism in Ireland to anti-colonialism in the Middle East.
Yeah.
And they don't see a contradiction. Now, for somebody like me and for somebody of my generation, yes, it's much more complicated than that.
Yeah, it is.
But seeing it through the eyes of a young British audience, and the one thing I'd emphasise, of course, is that in both cases, the audience were extremely young.
Yeah. I've noticed the same thing. I'm just listening to my children talking, and they see it in very black and white terms as well. Yeah. They don't see the several million shades of grey that you and I may see in all this. When you look through some of the other bands, just a little bit on the Wolftones. I mean, that was a very strange thing when you saw the festival of Electric Picnic, where people are running towards the tent. You know, how do you explain that?
I say this in the book, and there was no band less camp than the Wolftones in terms of their presentation.
Yep.
But at the same time, I think there is a little bit of, certainly on behalf of the audience, it's a sort of, this stuff isn't, because this stuff doesn't really matter anymore, because the conflict is over, because we think the conflict is over, we can indulge ourselves in a little bit of cosplay here. We can pretend to be rebels. Yeah. When there's not really any particular cost to that. There's no particular sense that that we're going to be made pay for this. So singing along with Come Out Your Black and Tans or something like that sort of fulfills a sort of nice, cozy version of, it's cozy now. It wouldn't have been close to 20 years ago.
Is it that by comparison to most of the bands that they're listening to, the Wolftones are relatively edgy these days?
One of the things, this is a slightly indirect answer, but one of the things I noticed when I started looking back on Wolftones press over the years was they're actually remarkably good interviewees.
Yeah.
Long, detailed answers to questions. They're politically aware.
Yeah.
They're evasive when asked about their support for the Provos. Always. No more than Gerry Adams himself. But when they're asked about things like immigration, when they're asked about things like their audiences, when they're asked, they are by no means stupid, and they're by no means one-dimensional. I wasn't entirely surprised by that. But when you dig deep into something, when you read a lot of interviews, I've never met them, but when you get to know them through their media, you realize that, A, they're very media savvy. There is a conceit among younger bands that they're the only people who know how to use the media because, you know, older people have just no clue about this sort of stuff at all.
Right.
And actually, they could teach a lot of bands a lot of lessons about how to talk to journalists.
We never thought we would see that coming. It really has to be said. Another song that has transcended its original roots is "Zombie" by the Cranberries. Yeah. What was your take on that?
So, big confession time, and we probably differ on this, but I never liked them as a band anyway. They were always. They always somewhere between boredom and annoyance, so that you'll get letters about that. But anyway, I always thought "Zombie" was a very ham-fisted attempt to say something about something that didn't really say very much. The thing that I'm interested in, and it's something that in the book I compare it to "Sunday Bloody Sunday" by U2, is this sense. So a zombie, I mean the key metaphor. If that's what it is, or the key simile within the song, is the idea of the undead, the idea of a being that's condemned to walk the earth forever, neither alive or dead, but existing in some form in between. And in "Sunday Bloody Sunday," Bono sings about how much longer must I sing the song, as if this, you know, this is going to go on forever. And it presents the conflict as something out of time, something happening in a framework that isn't governed by all the normal things that determine what we do. And I think that's it's reductive, but it's also othering. And it's a way in which a lot of us in the Republic distance ourselves from the conflict in Northern Ireland while still cleaving to a sort of, well, of course I'd like to see a united Ireland, but only if it's achieved peacefully and only by consent and so forth. But never actually wanting to deal with, well, yeah, okay, so how are you going to do that? And I don't think a song like "Zombie" was helpful. I don't think something, not that I expect pop musicians to be helpful in this regard necessarily. It's not our job.
It is striking, though. What strikes a chord with people, though, isn't it? And how now you hear it at sporting occasions and all of that kind of stuff. God, you have to say, it never loses the capacity to surprise you, does it? That's never going to go away. Listen, Stan, thanks very much for that. I can't recommend the book enough. It's called Popular Music and Conflict in Ireland, and it will greatly help you. You're trying to make sense of people like Kneecap at the moment. It'll help you enormously. Stan, thank you very much for that.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.